I used to suck. I mean, I still suck now, but I used to suck more than I do now. And over the last few years, I've definitely sucked a bit less than usual. By the way, we are outside. This is the first outdoor podcast episode I've ever done. Decided to get a bit of sunshine because I've been stuck indoors for the last few months working on the guest episodes, the solo episodes in my room and in the studio. So I thought, why don't we just get some morning sunshine, do a outdoor episode for the first time, and yeah, just take it all in before it becomes autumn and dark and depressing in December and onwards for a few months. So yeah, going to make the most of the summer sunshine. But I used to suck, like, even more than I do now, right? And I would be waking up late, sleeping super late. The common stuff that most people go through and most teenagers go through, right? But I always wanted to be better. And I always knew I could be better. And I was anxious. I was probably quite lonely. This was like around like lockdown time, like 2020 and onwards. And I was like super skinny. I mean, I'm not massive now, but I've definitely got a bit bigger, gone to the gym and stuff. And yeah, I just like didn't really know what I wanted to do. I mean, I was going out with my camera in nature, but I wasn't that fulfilled. And I wanted to change that. And I didn't really know how to change that. And I wanted to leave my hometown. I wanted to explore the world. I wanted to, you know, meet new people, meet more like-minded people. I didn't want to just go to the pub every day. I didn't want to just drink every weekend and destroy my sleep and like chase girls for like no apparent reason. So I started to change. And I always felt a bit different to people, but I'm sure a lot of people that are watching this feel the same. I think that's a human part of the human condition where you don't feel that similar to people. And we pretend to with small talk and with, you know, talking about the weather. If you're in the UK, that's a classic. But I feel like a lot of people crave a deeper conversation, a deeper connection, but we're too scared to ask the deep questions, ask the uncomfortable questions. And a reason why it's good to start podcasts is you have free license to do that. And yeah, I just was a bit of a loser. I was anxious. I was skinny. I was like going out in nature, but I wasn't working out. I wasn't meeting new people. I wasn't talking to new people. And a few things I did that helped was, one, go to the gym. So after a breakup, and after being rejected by a girl, I was like, fuck this, I need to start going to the gym. And a lot of my buddies were going to the gym at the time. And I remember like when they were going and when other people were going, I was coping. I was using cope and saying like, oh yeah, gym bro, yeah, that's just like toxic masculinity, when it's just not. And I was doing that because I was insecure and because I was skinny and probably low testosterone and thought, you know, only like idiots go to the gym. But then I started going, right? And after about 6 months, so I was starting in April, maybe 2023. So in year 13, which was quite late, a lot of people go to the gym when they're much younger than that. I mean, I went to the gym in like year 9 for like a few weeks, but I had no idea what I was doing, didn't gain any muscle. But I started going consistently to the gym, started off at like 4 times a week. And during that period from about maybe April to August, I started gaining a bit of muscle. And I used to have like really long hair and I used to be like really skinny and stuff. And I cut it back a bit shorter and yeah, just became more confident in myself. And this was just before uni. So it was perfect timing really. And then I went to uni and then started going to the gym even more, like every single day, maybe like resting, like push pull legs rest. And it did wonders for my confidence. But a lot of people get to this stage and then they stop there. Like, you know the person in the gym, or you know the person who's like super jacked and they still are like a degenerate. They still drink too much. They still vape after they go to the gym. They still stay up late. They still go clubbing. And like, if you want to do that, like, that's fine. But a lot of people force themselves to do that to try and fit in with the crowd. And that sucks, you know. There should be an alternative to that. And I didn't want to be like that. I mean, I went to uni, Freshers Week, went out a few times, didn't drink much, got given a few free shots by people, but other than that, I didn't drink too much. And then I was kind of like, fuck this, like, I don't want to just be a degenerate who goes to the gym. Like, 99% of people that go to the gym at our age are like 18, 19, 20. And yeah, I decided to not go for like a short-term mating strategy and try and find a long-term girlfriend. And I got lucky and that's what I did. You know, I found someone who I'm still with, and that definitely gives you focus as a young guy. Now the sun's like not on my face, so I'm going to be like half shaded. Right? Let me squeeze forward. Am I still in shot? Yeah, still good. That gives you so much focus. Like if you get into a long-term secure relationship as a young man, that really, really keeps you focused. It stops you from going out. It stops you from, you know, looking for a new person to like get with every single weekend. And like a lot of people like say they like going out for like the friendship, to be with their friends. And I'm like, of course, that's the case. But even if that is the case, at the back of 99% of people's minds, there's always that, not even afterthought, but thought that they might get with someone. And like the chance of meeting your girlfriend in a nightclub at 3 a.m. is quite low. Obviously, you might meet your future wife in a pub at like 10 p.m. But if you're into self-improvement and you want to improve yourself, do you think it's a really good idea to get with someone when you're both under the influence of alcohol? Probably not. It's probably better to get with someone who doesn't do that thing. If that's what you don't want to do, if you don't want to drink and you're going out and going to the pub because you're lonely and you want to meet a girl, it's probably not a good idea. Whereas if you do like drinking and you do like going out and you want someone who's aligned with that, then that's fine. But I'm talking to the person that goes out because they want to meet someone, but feels like they have to go out to drink to do that. And I promise you that's not the case. It's obviously much harder to cold approach people in person, but with my girlfriend, my partner, I did it in the middle of the day on the university campus, stone cold sober, and just had like a normal conversation. Like she's half French, so we started talking about, I asked her where she's from because she had a bit of an accent and she said France. So then like I just started waffling about France because, you know, I love it, I go there all the time. And it's that easy. Like you just treat them like a normal human being, and it's just like reps, I guess. I obviously was like nervous doing it, but if they're a normal human being, which they probably are, if you go up to them and just like ask them a few questions about themselves and let them talk, then they're going to respect you either way, even if they say yes or no. And remember, it's like it's her job to reject you. So going up to a girl in the coffee shop isn't wrong. Going up to a girl on the university campus isn't wrong. I think it's actually worse if you go up to a drunk girl at 3 a.m., to be honest. Like it's a bit more weird, even if you are drunk. Like that should be a normal thing. And like our like post 2020 like generation struggles so much with that, even if you're in your 20s. Like that's the good thing about university, is you get to become a new person and you leave your hometown. Because yeah, when I was back in my hometown, you know, you think you have this like reputation, or you think everyone knows you and there's no new people to meet, no new girls to meet. But once you go to uni or you leave your hometown, no one knows you. It's a blank slate. You can just be the person that you want to be without the judgment, because no one has these predisposed beliefs of you from like 5 years ago. And to be honest, like no one actually cares about you anyway. Like no one's thinking about you. So if you're having these limiting beliefs, like, oh, I'm really upset and I want to meet new people, but I just feel like I'm going to be judged, or like, oh, I can't go up to that girl that I knew from 5 years ago because like I was like an idiot back then, and she'll probably think the same. Like, no, she's not. She doesn't think that. And no one's thinking about you to begin with. Like everybody just thinks about themselves. And if you like fell over in the street, for example, you're going to be thinking about that for the rest of your life, but everyone's going to forget about that within 5 minutes. It's just how it goes. And we overemphasize the importance of ourselves because that's like a survival tactic, right? Am I actually in shot right now? Yeah, I am. So yeah, but I went to uni, long-term partner, and that just keeps you grounded. If you have like a stable, secure relationship. So this is some advice for people trying to find a long-term partner when they're 18, 19, and 20. So, or even younger. So you want to try and find someone who's securely attached. So in sixth form, I started learning psychology It was one of the courses I did, one of the courses I studied, and we learned attachment theory. So I think it's like Bowlby and like Ainsworth, like these like old like 1960s and 1970s and stuff, psychologists, and they studied attachment, and they found this thing called the internal working model, the IWM. And what that is it's basically the first attachment we have with our primary caregiver. So 9 times out of 10, it's our mum. So what type of attachment we have with our mum translates into the type of attachment we have in future relationships with our girlfriends, with our partners, with our wives, or obviously husbands and boyfriends, etc. So if you have an attachment with your mum or your primary caregiver, that's going to reflect into your future relationships if you don't do something about it. So there's 3 or 4 types of different attachment. There's a secure attachment where you don't spend a lot of time away from your primary caregiver. When you're young, you get loved, you get cared for adequately, like more than enough. And that turns you into a secure attachment. So you explore the world, but then you come back. So Ainsworth did studies with securely attached infants, and what they'd do is they'd crawl away and explore, but then they'd come back. And this was different for the other types of attachment. So the next attachment type is avoidant attachment type. And avoidant attachment type is when you probably spend too much time away from your primary caregiver, from your mother, which means you become super independent and super like just uninterested in your primary caregiver. You just like explore the world, and it might sound good, but it doesn't help in future relationships, because what ends up happening is if you're an avoidant attachment type, you end up not giving your partner enough love. And whenever something goes wrong, you will break up or you'll cheat. So the classic example is like the avoidant. I mean, the girls have it as well, but it's like the avoidant male who, you know, is like you get together with, and then they don't show their feelings. They don't talk about their feelings. They cheat on you. They avoid confrontation. As an example, this girl has a boyfriend, and this girl's friend had a boyfriend, and he was probably avoidant attachment style, and his car broke down and he broke up with her because his car broke down, because he just like couldn't deal with the emotions and couldn't like confront the emotions with his girlfriend, and it was too much for him, it was too stressful for him, so he broke up with that relationship. That's not a very secure attachment style. I literally live on like a main road, so if you hear like motorbikes and stuff, I apologize. Hopefully you can hear the birds, and there's a butterfly up there as well, which is really nice, a large white butterfly soaking in the sun, soaking in the morning sun. So cool. So avoidant attachment style, secure attachment style, and then there's insecure. So it's insecure, avoidant, insecure, I think, resistant. So insecure resistant is like the babies, when the babies are separated from their mother in these psychological studies, they'll kick and scream, and they'll want to be back with the mother. And then when the avoidant babies are separated from their mother, they don't give a, they don't care. They're just like unbothered. And then when they're securely attached children are separated from their mother, they get upset. But when the mother's reintroduced, the securely attached baby, you know, cuddles with the mom, is like super happy, super secure, all good. The avoidant doesn't care, isn't interested. And then the insecure resistant or the anxious attachment, kicking and screaming. When the mother comes back, they're still kicking and screaming. They're still anxious. They're still agitated that the mother left them. And the reason why insecure attachments tend to happen is because of inconsistent love, inconsistent care. So the mother or the primary caregiver might be working a like 12-hour job, or might just like leave the child and neglect the child, or send the child to like the grandparents for too long, or send it to their friends because they're so busy, or they're just like want to get on with their lives and not take care of their child properly. And this ends up being reflected in your future relationships. So, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the avoidant and anxious attachment styles. It's from the relationship we have with our primary caregivers, with our mothers. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, but it does make sense. Like, so much stuff happens in childhood, and if we don't do something about it, we end up just staying like that and staying in that behavioral pattern. Is my head cut off? Wait, let me just double check if my head's cut off on the camera. I might have been just talking for like 20 minutes with my head completely cut off. So I apologize if you've seen half my head. Okay, I wasn't cut off, but just readjusted the camera in the sunlight. All right. Ooh. So yeah, that reflects our relationships in adulthood, our attachment to our mothers. And what ends up happening is, if I already explained what happens if you're insecure, avoidant, you know, you'll have a hard time showing your feelings, you probably cheat, you can't stay in a long-term stable relationship, you end up just going out with people for 1 month and breaking up with them, or you just cheat on them. And then insecure, anxious, which I think maybe I had when I was like first, like when I was a teenager. I don't know, or maybe it's just low confidence. I have no idea, because I have a really good relationship with my parents, so no idea. But insecure, anxious is when you're like almost like a, you know, like a helicopter parent, where they're like overarching on their kid and they don't let their kid do anything by themselves. I think insecure, anxious attachment is kind of similar. Like, they need a lot of validation, they need a lot of care. If you like try and do something by yourself, they just think you're cheating on them. They'll just be like really insecure and not let the partner do anything by themselves, or have a hard time letting the partner do something themselves. And they'll need a lot of compliments, they'll need a lot of love. And if you don't give them a bit of love when they ask for it, they'll probably throw their toys out of the pram, right? And why does this matter? Why is this a problem for like teenagers and young people? If you get into a relationship with an avoidant person or an anxious person, or you're one of those yourself, you're gonna have a really hard time having a long-term stable relationship that doesn't take energy away from you. So if you compare, let's just compare a secure relationship to a avoidant and an anxious relationship first. So a secure relationship is, you know, you can do stuff by yourself and it's not a problem. You trust your partner, you're both loyal to each other, you don't suspect the other one's cheating or like chatting bad, saying bad things about you behind their back. Yeah, you can just have your alone time, have your space. When you argue, you are able to fix it quickly, and there's no hard feelings, there's no silent treatment, there's no guilt tripping, there's no gaslighting. And if your partner goes out with their friends, you don't worry about them, you don't worry that something bad's gonna happen or they're gonna do something to ruin the relationship. So things like that. It's just nice and calm. It's almost like, I was gonna say boring, but it's not, it's just content. I was talking to my friend a few weeks ago, like, and we were saying how relationships, like, we almost said relationships should be boring, not like like an old 70-year-old couple, but then why are they still together at 70? It should just be content. You should just be happy, and you shouldn't have to worry, you shouldn't have to overcompensate, you shouldn't have to, you know, put all your energy and resources into making sure they're all right. And a secure relationship means that the partner can deal with their own stuff with your support, but they don't necessarily need you to deal with it. If you weren't together, they'd still manage it because they have a secure family that they can talk to, they have friends that they can talk to, and they can just deal with it internally. Whereas an anxious or avoidant relationship, you'd have to, if you're dealing with someone like that, someone with anxious or insecure attachment style, they will sap all your time from you. You'll have to permanently be thinking about their feelings over yours. You'll be continually putting more to make sure they're all right than you get back. And they're the center of your world. They're just over consuming, all encumbering your life. You have no friends now. You have no hobbies. You have no career plans. You're just focused on them, making sure their needs are met. And you don't have a life because you're just obsessed with them. and you're always making sure they're okay. Because if you, you know, have your own time, have half a day to yourself, they'll be spamming you with messages saying, where are you? What's going on? Why aren't you like talking to me? Or like, do you love me anymore? Like, are we going to break up? Like, are you cheating on me? Like, that's what happens. Whereas if you're in a secure relationship and you go to the sauna for an afternoon, you know, your partner might ask, oh, where are you? Oh, dinner's ready at 6 p.m. I assume you're at the sauna or something like that. And then you get home and you explain where you were, and that's fine. Then you get on with the rest of your evening together. You know, it doesn't turn into, small things don't turn into an argument. Obviously, you can still be in a secure relationship and have arguments. I'm not saying that. That's just normal. That's normal in every relationship. But it's how quickly that argument goes from something small and manageable to something huge and out of control, and you suddenly broken up. You know, that's the difference. So as a young guy, you need to either acknowledge that you're avoidant or you're insecurely attached, and, you know, read some books or listen to some podcasts on how to fix that. Or you are securely attached, or you might be insecurely attached as well, and you need to try and find a securely attached partner. And to be honest, it's probably you need to really think where you're going to find that type of partner, a securely attached partner. Are you going to find a securely attached partner in a club at 3 a.m.? Are you going to find a securely attached partner on a dating app? You might on a dating app. Don't know. You've got to decide where the higher volume of securely attached people are versus insecurely attached people are. If you're looking in a nightclub, you're probably not going to find as many securely attached people, because a lot of people in nightclubs are looking for a one night stand, a short term partner, or just to get off with as many people as possible, which if you want to do that, that's fine. But if you want a long term stable relationship, probably not a good idea to go looking in that area. Whereas if you looked in a library or a cafe or on your university campus or at the gym or in the sauna or a yoga class at 6 a.m. or 8 a.m. or 9 a.m., you're probably going to have a higher chance of finding someone that you can genuinely have a long-term relationship with. So like I said earlier, I met my partner on university campus, and it was like mid-morning. It wasn't in a nightclub. It wasn't, you know, in like Wetherspoons or something. It was like in a like normal, like non-degenerate place. And I'm lucky because she still could have been, you know, going out all the time. And if I've been speaking the wrong, it doesn't matter. Going out all the time and drinking and stuff, but she wasn't. Like, you got to make sure that your values align. And, you know, I'm 20. I don't know everything about relationships, but I've been almost in a 2-year stable, secure relationship. And I know I needed this advice when I was 15, 16, 17, 18. So, you just need someone that aligns with your values. And you don't want to get into a relationship with someone if their values don't align with yours. So if you, you know, don't like going clubbing, maybe it's not a good idea to get with someone who's goes out clubbing 4 times a week. If you, you know, want kids, then obviously you need to get with someone who likes kids. If you like fitness, maybe it's be better if they like fitness as well. If you like reading, you like learning about the world, or you like going out in nature, then you should try and find a partner who likes the same. It's common sense, but it's so easy to just forget about stuff like this until you're 6 months into a relationship and you realize you don't even like the partner and you want to get out of it. Do you really think it's going to last if she likes going out and clubbing and getting drunk, and you like going to the sauna and going to the beach and staying inside and cuddling in bed? Probably not, right? So you need to find someone who aligns with your values and your morals, and even like with stuff like money as well. Like, you just need to find someone who has similar interests to you. You know, opposites may attract in the short term, but similarity wins over the long term. So definitely try and find someone. And, you know, when you're young, it's terrifying going up to someone in a cafe or going up to someone in the gym. You know, if you spend too much time on social media, which you shouldn't, you'll see these probably clips of guys being recorded going up to girls in the gym and stuff, which like is such a low like probability of happening, like 9 times out of 10. If you go up to a girl in the gym and like just ask her a few questions, ask her where she's from, whether she's joined here recently, and you just get chatting like you would to one of your mates, that's not a problem. But we have this idea that if we go up to a girl, like we're going to get the police called on us because you spend too much time on social media and you have this like skewed extreme version of the world because only the extreme stuff goes viral on social media. Example, I posted a clip from my podcast where I asked a alcohol historian what the health, one surprising benefits of alcohol or one surprising fact about alcohol was. And she said, there's like some health benefits or some nutritional value in alcohol. and then like, obviously half of the comments were like confirmation bias. Oh, that means I can drink now. Yay. And then the other half were, this is so wrong. Like this is absolutely like just crap, like wrong. And then it went viral, which is two extreme black and white views. And that's what happens on social media. So if you're spending too much time on social media and you've like your algorithm sends you stuff about relationships or about what boys say about girls or girls say about boys, the stuff that's the most extreme is the stuff that goes most viral. So then that gives you a misaligned view of how the world actually works. If you just went off your phone and started going up to people in person, like male and female, you'd realize 99% of people are actually happy to talk to you if you just have a normal like conversation and ask them questions about themselves and let them talk. And I think going to the gym and going to the sauna or like going to like classes or like, I don't know, like book clubs and stuff, which most people don't do nowadays, is probably the best way to find more like-minded people. And let's go off relationships and let's go on to more like finding friends. Let me just check my audios. All good? Yeah. So finding like-minded people as a teenager, you're probably in the position where you don't fit in with your old friends, but you haven't met the new friends that you're more like-minded and that you'll generally get along with. And this is the lonely chapter. The lonely chapter can last years, it can last months, it can last weeks, but you've started to get into self-improvement, you started reading books, you've started, you know, not going out, not drinking, not smoking, not vaping, not clubbing. And you've decided to work on this side hustle or this business or this social media account, and you don't fit in with your friends anymore. But you haven't become advanced enough to meet the new friends and the new tribe who you will get along with. The problem is, my friend, you have to go through this lonely chapter to meet the new people who are more advanced than you and who will eventually accept you. You have to keep improving yourself. You have to take that hit for a few years. You know, after reading so many books about the most successful people, about listening to podcasts on the most successful like young men or like 20 to 30 year old men, they all talk about the lonely chapter. You know, Iman Gadzi, Chris Williamson, Mike Thurston, Alex Hormozi, you know, all these people, they talk about the lonely chapter where they knuckled down for 2 years, 3 years, or even longer, where they stopped going out, they stopped drinking, and they just worked on one thing themselves for inhumane amounts of time. You know, they go into monk mode, as everyone likes to call it. And this is just a season. This is the season that will get you to the next level. This is the season that will get you the friends, get you the status, get you the money, get you the life, get you the freedom that you genuinely want. And if you bend back into the previous reality that you were trying to escape from, you'll remember that you've already been down that path and you know exactly where it leads and you know the exact reason why you were trying to avoid it in the first place. And you'll just have to accept it. and you either stay average and stay in your hometown and stay the person that doesn't reach their potential, or you take the leap, go into the unknown, and don't have many friends for a few months, for a few years, and come out the other side as a better person and someone that will have friends who will support them, who are into the same things as them, and overall will have a better life. But you just have to take that hit of status, that hit of loneliness for as long as it takes. And, you know, it may last a long time, but it's a cool story to tell in the end. And I've been going through that. I'm still going through that. It's not as bad as it once was, maybe a year or two ago. But if you're, you know, starting a social media channel, or if you're into self-improvement, you want to learn more about the world, you want to become financially free, you want to become successful, you want to start a podcast or anything, like you want to start a business, not many people are going to relate to you. And instead of going out, instead of clubbing, you stay inside, you read. Instead of you like doing some normal activities or joining a football club or, you know, I don't know, just like normal stuff, you don't, you stay inside. And it may seem painful in the moment, but you're going to look back at it and be so thankful you did that. Because if you didn't do that, you'll probably end up looking back and being shameful and dissatisfied about the life that you have, because you know you have potential to be something greater. And that's a good motivator. Fear is such a good motivator for this process, you know? Do you really want to be working in a 9-to-5 office job for the rest of your life? Do you really want to be in debt for the rest of your life? Do you really want to be, you know, working for a boss and, you know, putting your tie on like a dog for the rest of your life? Do you really want to be out of shape and unfit for the rest of your life? Do you really want to be not have the time to go out in nature and not have the money to spend on your family and not have the money to spend to take your family on holiday or pay for your parents' mortgage for the rest of your life? Like, do you really want, because it's not just you that's suffering in this position. If you don't become financially free, if you don't become the person that you know you can be, you know, in shape, healthy, like satisfied, fulfilled with what you're doing, being your own boss and making enough money to do so, everyone else around you is going to suffer, unless you're already super rich and successful, which you're definitely not, or probably not, because your parents are still going to have to work and probably not even be able to retire. They're still going to be in debt and have to pay for the house for the rest of their life and not even be able to pay it off. They're going to be sleep deprived. They're going to be stressed out. Your siblings are going to have to work an office job that they don't even like just to make the bills, just to be able to pay for the bills. You won't be able to go on holiday. You won't be able to travel. You won't be able to move out of your house until you're like 45. Like, do you really want that life? Do you really want to be stuck in your hometown? Do you really want to be just stuck in an office job where you don't even like your colleagues? Like, no. And now we have the internet and AI. There's another path that we can take to escape that. And you just got to start consuming the right content, reading books on entrepreneurship or on successful people, reading biographies of successful people, consuming, you know, podcasts that will help you improve, including this one, and start changing your behavior. Start taking action, because it's all good doing this mental masturbation, but if you don't change your behavior, you're doing a disservice to yourself. And it's going to be tough at first, because most people won't be doing this. Most people will still be going out drinking. They'll still be putting themselves into debt and not trying to get themselves out of it. They'll still be trying to, you know, suck up to their teachers or to their bosses and just think, oh yeah, I'll just do this job, you know, because my parents did this or they told me to do that. Like, most people won't be trying to make a business or trying to go down the different path. So you're going to get a lot of clapback at the start. And sometimes it's better to just keep it a secret. For the first few years, I started my Instagram account as a nature photographer. And I started it when I was 15. And for the first 3 or 4 years, I didn't tell anyone from my school that I did it. I blocked all my friends so they wouldn't find out, because I was so scared that they'd find out and take the piss out of me. And I thought if they took the piss out of me, then I'd stop doing it. And I really wanted to do it, and I didn't want to stop doing it. And, you know, I'm obviously still a photographer now, but I'm mainly doing the podcast, and I'm more confident now. And I tell everyone about the podcast, and you realize that most people don't care. And two, if they do say something, they actually like rate it. They actually compliment you for it. And if they don't compliment you for it, for doing what you want to do, for chasing after your dreams, then remove them from your life, because you don't need that energy in your life. You don't need people criticizing you for doing something different, doing something that doesn't hurt anyone else, doing something that actually benefits yourself and the world. You don't need people, you don't need naysayers to criticize you, because if they're criticizing you, they just envy you. They're just jealous of you. They're just seeing, oh, he's the same age as me, or he's younger than me, or she's younger than me, and he's doing something that I thought was impossible and thought that I didn't want to do or that I couldn't do. And you're just reflecting that insecurity onto them, and it has nothing to do with you. But you're going to get criticized. You're going to get hate. You're going to get envy from people that are cynical and that are too insecure to take the leap and take the risk. So just bear that in mind. But if you do get that, take it as a compliment. It has nothing to do with you, and it shows you're going down the untrodden path and you're escaping, you know, the 9-to-5 Netflix purgatory. And if you don't get any hate, you're not successful. So yeah, man, it's a beautiful day though. Really beautiful day. Oh, I need to do this more. I think I'm going to do this every week. I mean, I live in Cornwall, so it rains quite a lot. So I don't know how often I can do it outside without an umbrella or something. But yeah, you know, I hope that these episodes, these outdoor episodes, help you get to know me a bit better, and you get some valuable advice from it. Again, I'm just talking from experience. I'm talking from what I live, how I think, and I don't want to tell anyone what to do. I just know that there's a lot of you watching this who do want to change. They do want to do something with their lives, and I've always benefited from having older people, other people who are going down the path or have gone down the path that I want to go down, give advice and tell about their experiences and their struggles, and it just helps. It's just good to know that there are people who go against the grain. There are people who don't just accept what society and what teachers and what parents and what bosses have like tried to make them do or try to turn them into. You know, there are other people around the world, and that's a good thing about social media and the internet. We find these people who show us there's a better side of life that we can, I guess, try to emulate and try to become and try to fulfill. So yeah, I've not been in nature enough though recently. I mean, I've been so focused on the show, the podcast, and my accommodation that I had all summer didn't have a garden, didn't have a green space. And I live in a small town right now in Cornwall, and there are some nature spots. I mean, we have the beach and stuff. It's like right next to the gym, which is awesome, but it's not the same as having your own garden, is it? You know, you really do take having a garden and take being in nature for granted when you don't have it. And then when you come back to it, you know, that's one of my favorite things about coming back home in Kent, is I know all the nature spots. I know there's like orchards and like fields next to my house. And that's where my journey started. That's where I started to go against the grain. That's where I decided to become a photographer, which is quite you know, a nature photographer, not many people do that, especially like around me. So I always love nature. I can hear the blue tits right now in the trees. And it's funny because, I mean, oh, butterfly. It's funny because what I'm starting to notice, Andy Warhol said it best. It's like when you stop wanting something, you get it. I find that to be axiomatically true. And what I found is when I really, 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 really wanted something when I was younger or even now, I didn't get it. And then a few years later, when I ended up getting it, I didn't care as much. I'll give a few examples in a minute. It's like when we want something, when we desire something, when we crave something, we're not ready for it. And if we actually got what we desired when we truly wanted it most, it would actually do us more harm than good, or we wouldn't be able to deal with it, or we wouldn't be able to perform best with that opportunity. It's only a few years into the future, when you've got enough experience, when you've become more mature, that you realize all that you're ready for it. You end up being ready for it. But when you're ready for it, you don't want it as much, and you don't get as much dopamine from it, and you're less excited for it. So you kind of feel like underwhelmed in a way. An example would be on the podcast, I had my absolute hero, wildlife filmmaker, National Geographic explorer and presenter, Bertie Gregory, who has his own Disney Plus shows. He's from the UK. He went against the grain and has become such a successful wildlife filmmaker, like traveling the world and creating his own show. So he's awesome. And I always wanted to like obviously meet him and talk to him. And he came on my podcast about a month or two ago. And I was just thinking, like, if he came on when I was 16, if I spoke to him when I was 16, it would have been insane. Like, that was when I would have wanted to speak to him most, like, even when I was 18. But I wouldn't have been ready for it. I would have been too nervous. I would have, like, sucked. I would have just, like, I just wouldn't have been able to enjoy it as much. Whereas, fast forward 2 or 3 years later, when I end up speaking to him, I was ready for it. But because I was ready for it, I didn't want it as much. And I didn't get as much excitement from it. Don't get me wrong, I was like super, super stoked. But I just thought back to my 18-year-old self and was like, man, I was obsessed with this guy like 2 years ago, and I still love him now. He's still one of my heroes. But I was super obsessed with him. But if I'd had the chance to interact with him when I was most obsessed with him and loved him most, I wouldn't have performed best. Fast forward 2 years, when I'm not as obsessed with him and like matured and, you know, a bit older, a bit more experienced, I was less nervous, but that ended up meaning I had a better experience and better podcast with him. So it's just something to think about. Like, if you really want that girl, or if you really want, you know, that job, or if you really want to move out of your hometown, or if you really want something, you just want an experience. If you really want it, you're probably not ready for it yet. If you really want £1 million, you're probably not ready for the £1 million yet. That's not to say don't work towards that thing, because, you know, I've wanted things and I've worked towards them. But it's actually a good thing that we don't get what we want straight away. Think about the lottery winners. Most lottery winners end up getting like going broke and getting to the level of wealth that they were before they had the lottery win. And it goes to show, like, if you get something too quickly, it goes like that. You crash. What comes up must come down. Newton's third law of motion. A force in one direction leads to an equal opposite counter reaction in the opposite direction. And I think I just butchered that, but, you know, if a force in one direction leads to an equal opposite force in the other direction. So if you get something too quickly, it'll be taken away from you just as quick. Or if you get something too quickly, you won't be ready for it. You'll be too nervous. And another example would be, you know, having my own garden and having like certain birds be in the garden. So when I was like 16 and 17, that was when I was like most into my bird photography. I would have loved to have a garden like this, because we're opposite a larger garden and then like another large garden. So loads of birds come into the garden right. And I would have loved to have be here at that age and like take photos of the birds, because there'd be like different species. There'd be goldcrest, there'd be cold tits. I've seen so many cool birds in this garden recently, but I don't think I would have been ready for it. And it's just something that keeps repeating in my life. Like as soon as I don't want something as much, I get it. Like the birds in the garden that I can photograph now. You know, I would have died to have this space to photograph birds a few years ago, and I'm not as fussed now. Now I'm not as fussed, I get it. It's just interesting. It's just really interesting. And I think it's going to keep happening with the show. Like once I get 100,000 subscribers, I'm like, really want it now. But am I ready for it? Maybe not. You know, am I ready to be a millionaire right now? Maybe not. I know in the future I'm going to have those things. I'm going to keep working towards those things. But when you most want it, you're probably least ready for it. And if you keep working towards it, with time, you end up getting it. But because you have to give time, and time takes time, you mature in that process, and then you end up getting it a bit later than you would have wanted to. But because it's a bit later, you're a bit older, you're a bit more experienced, and you care less. You care less once you get it, which is a good thing. If you're too emotional with things, it leads to illogical and rash decisions. So by dreaming of something and that thing taking time, it's actually the best thing that can happen to you. Even if in the moment it sucks because you just want it now, you want to get it now. Why is it taking so much time? Why is it took this person 2 months to get it? Why is it taking me a year? You're not ready for it yet. But if you keep working towards it, you'll get it. But the fact that things take longer than we expect, and the fact that our dreams take a lot of time, it one, tests our limits and tests whether we really want this thing. And two, it means once we do get it, we're actually ready for it. So although it sucks in the moment, it's actually better to... Am I still in the shade? God damn it. The sun keeps moving. Although it takes time, it's actually a good thing that our dreams take a long time. Definitely. If we got what we wanted straight away, we'd end up being spoiled. And have you heard of this thing called the hedonic treadmill? So it's the idea that we always return to our baseline happiness. So I'm sure you've been on a lovely holiday before. You're super happy. You get the massive surge of dopamine. And then after being there for 3 days, you kind of just like, you just feel the same as you did before. You felt the same as you did, you know, when you were back at home. Example, you know, I always dreamt of going to Cornwall, of escaping Kent, of being as far away as possible, like being 6 hours away from my hometown, you know, becoming a new person, you know, going surfing, you know, like going to all the coast, going to all the cool spots. And I was lucky to go to Cornwall quite a lot on holiday before moving here for university. And I was so excited to come. And, you know, the first few months were great. It was like super like, whoa, like so awesome. And then you just like get into the routine, you get into the habits and you get used to it. And I've listened to a lot of millionaires and a lot of successful people. And it seems to be the same where they want this thing so badly and they get the money, they get the girl, they get the Lamborghini. And, you know, getting it's great. Having it's mid, having it's the same. And that's not to say you shouldn't strive for things in life, because we all want financial freedom. We all want to be in complete control of our time. But you just need to remember that external things won't fix you. You have to fix yourself internally. And the best combination is being internally sound, being internally content, whilst also striving for external things and improving your external conditions and your external life. Like, I'd rather be content and then also succeed externally and get money and get, you know, the nice house and get the, you know, awesome family, than strive for money like a slave, or strive for the mansion like a slave and then be miserable when I get it. But I think the majority of the time, it's actually the latter which happens. You know, a billionaire gets a yacht and he's still miserable and he still wants to kill himself. And that's not to say like money doesn't like buy happiness, because money solves all your money problems, like Naval said. And you do probably feel better once you get external success, but you need to just try and be as internally content while simultaneously striving for more, striving for better, because we are humans and we need to grow as people. But that's not just externally, that's also internally. And I think a good routine, a good habit, good habits, and avoiding a bad routine and bad habits make you internally content. As an example, I try and do the same three things every single day, which I do. I work on what I want to work on. So I work on the podcast right now. It used to be photography, but I work on the podcast. That's a massive chunk of my day. And then I go to the gym and I read. If I do those three things, I've won. Like, that's my day done. And they're all leading to me becoming smarter, stronger, healthier, hopefully wealthier as well. That's the idea. And if I just do those three things every day, I know it will compound over time. And that makes me internally content with myself. And then also doing things like going to the sauna and socializing. That's super important as well. Spending time with my partner. It's just so good. And, you know, even things like eating less carbs, especially in the morning, like avoiding bread and stuff, and trying to wake up at the same time every day, early in the morning, not sleeping too late, like basic shit that no one does. Like, it's so trite to say stuff like this, but it isn't, because everyone's still struggling with it. You know, it's so cliche to say stuff like that, like, oh, fix your sleep. But it isn't, regardless of it's cliche or not, it's almost not cliche, because you still haven't fixed your sleep. So you still need reminding. You still need to be reminded that that's a problem that you need to fix. So yeah, man. Yeah. I've really enjoyed this. This has been nice. I think I'll post these on the weekend. They'll be like weekend episodes. I need more sunlight, man. And I don't know how good the audio is going to be, but I have a garden now, so why not? I'm just looking at Robin in the tree. He's doing his alarm call. Why wouldn't I do this? You know, you get to know me more as well, so it's cool. But I hope you learned something from this and got to know me better, you know. But speaking of robins, they are the only bird in the UK, or one of the only birds in the UK, to hold their territories over winter. So in spring and summer, a lot of birds will create their own territories. Look, like, imagine, okay, so you have five gardens and a blackbird will have one, another blackbird will have another, or like another one will have two. And they have these territories to obviously find a mate, to feed on, to raise their chicks. And it's like their little house. But for some, the thing with birds, it's like they'll have a territory in spring when they're breeding and when they're mating, but then after summer, or during summer, once breeding season ends and autumn and winter begins, they get rid of their territories and they become a bit more like egalitarian and a bit more communist. And they normally just will feed together, you know, the blue tits and the great tits and the coal tits, they'll all flock together and feed together as like a little communist bird society. But then when it becomes breeding season, when mating's involved, when spreading their genes to the next generations involved, they become super capitalist and super, I guess, like libertarian, zero sum. It literally is. It's so interesting. I never thought of it like that. Yeah, they become super libertarian and they have their territory, they have their land, and they like fight each other to the death and like sing. That's why the birds sing in spring more, because they're defending their territory and they're trying to attract mates, and they're just more cutthroat with each other. But for some reason, red-breasted robins, they keep their territories in winter, which means they sing in winter as well. It's crazy. It's really cool, because if robins didn't keep their territory in winter in the UK, we would have very few birds singing. The robin's singing right now. Oh, it stopped now. It's singing in that tree. But yeah, for some reason, robins are just super aggressive, super territorial, and they'll keep their winter territories, which means they sing in winter, but their song's slightly different in winter. It's a bit more simple because obviously they have less energy, they have less food, they don't want to spend too many calories singing versus spring, where it's more high stake because they're trying to spread their genes to the next generation. But yeah, when it's winter, you'll notice there'll be one bird singing and it'll be robins. So thank you very much, robins, for singing in winter, because it makes it a bit more bearable. You know, I always miss it when it's winter and it's cold and there's like no birds singing, but luckily we have robins to keep us going, you know. And I think the robins are gaining their winter territories right now, although tawny owls also have winter territories because they start breeding season in January, so like super early. I think they have their chicks in like late February, March. So they start finding mates and setting out their territory in January. But obviously we don't hear it as much because we're normally asleep when they're singing. So yeah, a bit of bird wisdom for you there. But I think the robins are starting to claim their winter territories. But in general, like August is like dead for bird watching and dead for nature. You know, breeding season ended. Most of the birds have migrated away. Most of the mammals have raised their young. So especially in woodlands, like the woodlands are empty compared to what they are in May. You get way less birds singing, way less birds, way less action. So yeah, it's actually, you'd think in summer, like all the birds are singing, but in late summer, it's dead. It's actually better in autumn and winter when all the birds are flocking together and finding food together. So yeah, it's just weird how in winter, the birds are super like communist and egalitarian. They'll find food and forage for food together. And then once it becomes breeding season and once it becomes, time to mate, they become super like libertarian and super capitalist and like zero sum and territorial. Super interesting. Yeah. I think we'll leave it on that. A few reminders. Guest episodes are on Monday and Wednesdays. Monday and Friday, sorry. I'm getting some like really big guests coming on and really big guest episodes to post and show to you guys. So stay tuned for that. I want to post at least one of these a week. I'll probably do more. Try and do one every morning, you know, breakfast with Jacob. Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. A bit different of an episode this time, but I hope you gained some wisdom. And yeah, if you do, like, there's a few things that you can do that will help you. Go to the gym every day, eat cleaner, you know, sleep earlier, read more, and work on something that you're genuinely passionate about. If you love pottery, start working on pottery in your free time. Make a pottery social media channel. You have no idea where it will lead you. I think a lot of people are miserable because they do jobs that they hate and they don't do the thing that is their calling. They don't become the photographer. They don't start the podcast. They don't start the pottery channel when they know deep down that's what they want to do, but they're scared of other people judging them and they think it won't get them anywhere. But I promise you, like, I just got monetized on YouTube from doing the podcast and I've only been doing it for 4 months, 3 months. It's crazy. The like opportunities we have in the modern day to actually do stuff and make a career out of something we're passionate about. We've never been luckier. So yeah, start your passion, start working out, start reading, start eating better, start sleeping better. And I will see you probably next week outside again. Hopefully it's not raining. Goodbye.